Hey guys, this is Yom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, we will be talking about Winnebago Industries, which is a leading manufacturer of recreational vehicles. In this video, we will be talking about the company's business by going through its 10K, then review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios, and finally find the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review Winnebago Industries.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10K, which is the annual report that Winnebago Industries filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended August 28th, 2021. On page 5 of this report, the company talks about its business. Winnebago is one of the leading North American manufacturers of recreation vehicles, RVs, and marine products with a diversified portfolio used primarily in leisure travel and outdoor recreational activities. The company produces its towable units in Indiana, motorhome units in Iowa and Indiana, and its marine units in Florida and Indiana. Winnebago distributes its RVs and marine products primarily through independent dealers throughout the United States and Canada, who then retail the products to the end consumer. The company also distributes its marine products internationally through independent dealers, who, like before, retail the products to the end consumer. Now let's look at Winnebago's principal products. The company states that its operations are organized into two reportable segments, towable and motorhome. A towable is a non-motorized vehicle that is designed to be towed by automobiles, pickup trucks, SUVs, or vans, and is used as temporary living quarters for recreational travel. The Recreation Vehicle Industry Association, RVIA, classifies towables in four types: conventional travel trailers, fifth wheels, folding camper trailers, and truck campers. The company manufactures and sells conventional travel trailers and fifth wheels under the Winnebago and Grand Design brand names. Next, the company describes these two towables that it produces and sells. The travel trailer is towed by the means of hitch attached to the frame of the vehicle, and the fifth wheel is constructed with a raised forward section that is connected to the vehicle with a special fifth wheel hitch. The company states that its travel trailer and fifth wheel towables are sold by dealers in the retail market, with manufacturers' suggested retail price ranging from approximately $30,000 to $137,000. Next, the company talks about its motorhome segment. A motorhome is a self-propelled mobile dwelling used primarily as temporary living quarters during vacation and camping trips, or to support active and mobile lifestyles. The RVIA classifies motorhomes into four types, all of which the company manufactures and sells under the Winnebago and Newmar brand names. Next, the company talks about the four types of mobile homes that it produces and sells that are Class A, Class B, Class C, and accessibility enhanced. The company states that its Class A, B, and C motorhomes are sold by dealers in the retail market, with manufacturers' suggested retail price ranging from approximately $96,000 to $1.4 million depending on size and model, plus optional equipment and delivery charges. Now let's look at the distribution and financing section on the next page, where the company states that its sales to dealers are made primarily on cash terms, and that the company enters into a repurchase agreement with the dealer's lender. The company states that its repurchase agreement provides that for up to 18 months after an RV is financed and up to 24 months after a marine unit is financed, in the event of a default by the dealer on the agreement to pay the lending institution and repossession of the unit by the lending institution, the company will repurchase the financed merchandise from the lender at the amount then due, which is often lesser than the dealer invoice. Winnebago's maximum exposure for repurchase can vary significantly, depending upon the level of dealer inventory, general economic condition, demand for its products, dealer location, and access to and cost of financing. In short, the way this setup works is that the dealer pays Winnebago in cash, the dealer finances that cash via a lender, the lender and Winnebago enter in a repurchase agreement where, in case the dealer defaults, Winnebago would repurchase that product from the lender. Winnebago does point out that this kind of repurchase agreement is customary in the industries that it serves. When it comes to competition, the company states that the RV and marine markets are highly competitive. However, it believes that its principal competitive advantages are its brand strength, product differentiation, product quality, and its service after the sales. Next, the company points out the seasonality in its business. The primary use of RVs and marine products for leisure travel and outdoor recreation has historically led to a peak retail selling season concentrated in the spring and summer months, and lower sales during the fall and winter months. So Winnebago is just pointing out the trends and cyclicality in its sales. Next, on page 11 of this report, the company talks about its risk factors. There's one specific risk factor that I wanted to go over, which is retail market deterioration and volatility may restrict the ability of its dealers and retail customers to finance the purchase of its products. Winnebago states that its business is affected by the availability and terms of the financing to dealers. Generally, RV and marine dealers finance their purchase of inventory with financing provided by lending institutions. One financial flooring institution held 30.5% of its total financed dealer inventory dollars that were outstanding at August 28, 2021. In the event that this lending institution limits or discontinues dealer financing, we could experience a material adverse effect on our results of operations. So as we look into 2022, we know that the Federal Reserve is thinking about tightening and raising interest rates. And when that does happen, there's volatility and credit market deterioration. Now let's go to page 45 of this report, where the company breaks down its revenues based on its two reportable segments. For the year 2021, the towable segment brought in about $2 billion. The motorhome segment brought in about $1.5 billion. And the corporate all other segment brought in about $81 million. We can see that the majority of the company's revenue for the year 2021 came from its towable segment. When we compare these revenue numbers to that of the year 2020 and 2019, we can see that the towable segment saw an exponential growth in the year 2021. Over the past 3 years, both the towables and motorhome segments saw its revenue grow. Next, looking at the capital expenditure, the company spent about $25 million in the towable segment, $17 million in the motorhome segment, and all others was about $2 million. When it comes to total assets, as of August 28, 2021, the towable segment accounted for about $790 million. The motorhome segment accounted for about $728 million, and the corporate all other segment accounted for about $544 million, which brought the company's total consolidated asset number to about $2 billion, which was an increase from the previous year. Finally, looking at the revenue breakdown by geography, the company brought in about $3.4 billion from the US market, and internationally it brought in about $219 million in the year 2021. We can see that almost all of the company's revenue comes from the United States, and that both in the United States and internationally, the company's sales have been growing over the past 3 years. Now that we have a brief understanding of Winnebago's business and its operating segments, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, I'm on Morningstar looking at Winnebago Industries, Inc. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2012, the company brought in about $582 million. And for the year 2021, it was about $3,630 million. Over the past 10 years, Winnebago's revenue has been trending upwards. Next is the operating income. The operating income is what we get when we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2012, the company's operating income was about $10 million. And for the year 2021, it was about $407 million. Similar to the company's revenue, the company's operating income over the past 10 years has been trending upwards. After that, looking at the net income. The net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2012, the company's net income was about $45 million. And for the year 2021, it was about $282 million. Over the past 10 years, the company's net income has always been positive, which tells us that the company has always reported a profit. Ideally, we want the company's revenue, operating income, and net income to have a similar trend. That is, we want these numbers to be positive and trending upwards. Next is the dividends per share. Back in 2015, the company paid out about 36 cents per share as dividend. And for the year 2021, it was about 48 cents per share as dividend. Over the past few years, the company has consistently paid out dividends and has been hiking its dividends ever since 2018. Next is the shares outstanding. Back in 2012, the company had 29 million shares outstanding, and for the trailing 12 months, it has 34 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, we can see that the company bought back its shares from 2012 through 2016. However, after 2016, the shares outstanding number has been increasing, which tells us that the company has been issuing more shares, which dilutes the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. The likely reasons why the shares outstanding number increased is because first, the company wanted to finance its growth through equity, and it does so by issuing more shares to pay for its future growth. And the second reason is stock compensation for the executives. Next is the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2012, the company's book value was about $5 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, that number had grown to about $34.8 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive and has been increasing, which tells us that first, the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet, and secondly, the proportion of the company's assets compared to its liabilities is growing. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2012, the company's free cash flow was negative, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $237 million. Ideally, we want the company's free cash flow numbers to be positive, staying steady or increasing, and that is what we're seeing in the case of Winnebago. We can see that the company's free cash flow has been trending upwards ever since 2013. I will be using the 2021 free cash flow number of $192 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company. Looking at the net margin, the net margin is the ratio of the company's net income to its revenue. So it compares the company's bottom line to its top line. Back in 2012, the company's net margin was 7.73%. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was 8.12%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales over the past 12 months, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had $8.12 left as pure profit. After that, looking at the return on equity, the return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2012, the company's return on equity was about 35.5%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 31.9%. Over the past 10 years, the company's return on equity has always been greater than 8%. The three ways of reporting higher return on equity numbers is first, when the company makes more money, that is when its net income increases. Second is when the company takes on more debt, that is when its liabilities go up, its equity portion would drop. And third, when the company buys back its shares, its equity portion goes down, which helps inflate the company's return on equity numbers. Next, looking at the return on invested capital. The return on invested capital gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2012, the company's return on invested capital was about 36%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 23%. Winnebago's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 12.71%. And since the company's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is the ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2012, the company's interest coverage was about 6.63 times. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 11.38 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health and liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company has enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Back in 2012, the company's current ratio was at 3.07. And for the latest quarter, it's at 2.18. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. A quick ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's quick ratio was at 1.42. And for the latest quarter, it's at 1.11. Winnebago's current and quick ratios indicate that the company is liquid enough to survive for the next 12 months. After that, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. So a financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's financial leverage was at 1.98, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.90. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio. This ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2017, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.62, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.48. Both the financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios show that the company is not overextending itself. That is, it is living within its means, and it's not taking on debt in order to finance its growth. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes that sale to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2012, the company's day sales outstanding was about 13.4 days, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about 22.62 days. Ideally, we want the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as it tells us that the management is aggressive with its accounting, as it's trying to recognize its revenue sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on the income statement. However, Winnebago's management does not seem to play any such accounting tricks, as the company's day sales outstanding number has stayed fairly consistent over the past few years. Next, looking at the day's inventory. This number gives an idea of how many days does the company's products sit in its inventory. Back in 2012, the company's day's inventory was about 53 days. And for the trailing 12 months, it's 39 days. Ideally, we want the company's day's inventory number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day's inventory number is growing, as it tells us that the company's inventory is just lingering around on the balance sheet. And what we want to see is those inventory being pushed from the balance sheet to the income statement and materialize as profit. Next is the payables period. Back in 2012, the company took about 15.78 days to pay its suppliers. And for the trailing 12 months, it took about 16.3 days to pay its suppliers. Ideally, we want the company's payable spirit to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose payable spirit is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the management is holding on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers on the cash flow statement. However, in the case of Winnebago, we can see that the management does not seem to be playing any such accounting tricks, as the payable spirit has stayed fairly consistent over the past few years. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, this number goes hand in hand with the company's days inventory. The inventory turnover gives an idea of how many times does the company go through its inventory in a calendar year. Back in 2012, the company's inventory turnover was about 7 times, and for the year 2021, it was about 11 times. Ideally, we want the company's inventory turnover to be increasing, and Winnebago's inventory turnover has been trending upwards over the past 10 years. Now let's look at Winnebago's current valuation. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Winnebago has a PE of 6.6. Its price to book is at 1.8. Price to sales is at 0.5. The company's price to cash flow is at 7.2 and has a dividend yield of 1%. When we compare Winnebago's current valuation to that of its 5-year average, we can see that on all the valuation metrics, Winnebago is currently undervalued as compared to its 5-year average. Similarly, when we look at the S&P 500, and the S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States, and we can think of the S&P 500 as our opportunity cost. We can see that on all the valuation metrics other than the dividend yield, Winnebago is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Now let's look at the company's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted Winnebago's 2021 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which was $192 million. I'm assuming the annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 6%. What this means is I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 6% every year for the next 10 years. Next, I'm using a discount rate of 10%. Said differently, I want to double my investment in about 7 years. Next, I'm using a long-term growth rate of 2.125%, which is in line with the 30-year treasury yield. The company has 34 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $529 million. I got this number from the company's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $79.5 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about $62.8 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 21% below the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $1.6 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $3.2 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $79.5. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Winnebago is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $31 per share. And if we disregard the debt, in other words, if you think that Winnebago is going to grow into perpetuity, so there's no point for the company to worry about paying off its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $95 per share. Finally, let's try to figure out what kind of return can we expect to get on this investment if we were to invest in this security at the current stock price. For that, we'll do a quick goal-seek analysis by setting our sell, which is the intrinsic value, to the company's current stock price, which is $62.8. By changing our discount rate, we get about 11.5%. What this means is if we were to invest in this security at the current stock price, we can expect to get an annual return of about 11.5% on this investment. So overall, Winnebago is a fundamentally strong company. Winnebago is undervalued not only from a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis standpoint, but also when we looked at the company's current valuation, we noticed that the company is undervalued. It is important to note that Winnebago's profit depends heavily on the credit market. So if there's a contraction in the US credit market or the economy, the consumer spending would drop, which would lead to the company reporting a lower profit number, which means the company's stock price would suffer. Lastly, Norbert Liu, who is a value investor from the Punch Card Management, has the security in his portfolio. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Winnebago interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should view next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'll greatly appreciate it. Thank you.